Jimmy, I'm a recovering addict. I want to thank God for everything. I'm clean by God's grace, sponsorship, and the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous. I want to thank the Quebec region for honoring me with the opportunity to come here and share my experience, faith, and hope. I want to thank Nick and Michelle for the phone calls and the messages. I want to thank you guys for the love and everything that's gone on so far this weekend. This is the third trip that I've been to Canada. This is my first time at this convention, and I definitely feel loved and like I would have a great desire to come back here and celebrate recovery with you guys. And I'm just going to start. Listen, I have one God. I attend one fellowship. I have one wife. I work one set of steps, one set of traditions. I believe in Narcotics Anonymous. I believe in our literature. I believe that these books are like Prego. It's in there. Anything you need for life and recovery is in the literature. I believe in our literature. I'll refer to the literature. I believe in living by Narcotics Anonymous principles. I believe in developing a relationship with God. My clean date is May 1st, 1992. I'm in my 21st year of recovery. And Nick said I had about 45 minutes, so I'm going to be real brief. I used a lot. I ended up homeless, jobless, and penniless. I used every drug from alcohol to heroin. I did everything you can imagine to get high. I lived to use and I used to live. And on April 30th of 1992, I took what I believe just for today, the last hit that I would ever take of a narcotic. I believe that my life has been transformed from a spot of hopelessness, helplessness, insecurity, self-deception, self-hatred, to a place from a hope fiend, from a dope fiend, to a hope fiend. I have hope today. I don't apologize for bringing my literature to the podium. I believe that that's the weapons of warfare against the disease of addiction. I just want to read a couple things. And I don't know if you can feel it, but in the Just for Today Living the Program on page 91, it says that there is a spirit or an energy that can be felt in our meetings. I don't know if you can feel the spirit and the energy in the meeting tonight, but I can feel the spirit of God in this meeting tonight. And I'm not necessarily talking about a religious God, a God that you got to pray to in a certain amount of times a day or in a certain position, or a God that has a certain doctrine behind it. I'm talking about that feeling inside of you that tells you that it's going to be all right if you just don't use Just for Today. I'm talking about that feeling inside that says you're going to be all right no matter what goes on. If your wife leaves you, you'll be all right. If your sister dies, you don't have to use. And I've got a story of devastation since I've been clean. I didn't come here and get clean and my life just became this glorious life in Narcotics Anonymous. I've been married to the same woman for 23 years. I've been with my wife for 31 years. It's the only woman I have ever been with. I've never been outside my marriage. I have never cheated on my wife. And I don't stay committed to my wife. I stay committed to the God that I stood before and said that no matter what happened between me and her, I would never forsake her or leave her, that I would always allow her to be who she is and love her through my dislike. Because the reality of it is I'm still self-centered with 20 plus years clean. I still want my way. I still think that she doesn't know what she's doing. I still think that I should be telling her what to do. And the reality of it is that she's a human being who has her own thought process. And I have to be able to honor that and respect that. And I got clean in 92, and in 93 I had my oldest daughter. She was put in a bubble in 94. They put her in this bubble and in this bubble, in the hospital, they told me she would never leave that bubble, that she would always live inside that bubble. The only way I would be able to hold her would be through these arms in this bubble, and that would be my life with my child, the dream of my life. Lost dreams awakened and new possibilities arrived. I wanted a child. God blessed me with a child, and now she was in this bubble, and I was going to have to live my life with her, visiting her in a hospital and holding her through this bubble. And the reality of it is, as hurt as I was, I still made meetings. I still wrote on steps. I still called my sponsor. I still sponsored men. And I went to the hospital every single day and held that little girl through that bubble in those arms until the day that they let her come home. They told her she would never live outside the bubble. She would always be a bubble child. And the reality of it is, today she's 19 years old. She's in her second year of college. She has a 3.75 grade average, and she takes a little pill to maintain her asthma, and she dances between 65 and 70 hours a week, and she is the light of my life. And she's a beautiful young girl. She is me with hair. She looks like me, she acts like me, she talks like me, she's sensitive like me, she's insecure like me, she is just me, and it scares me. But the reality of it is that she has enough love in her life from my wife and I and the people that surround her that she's been able to press on and push through her insecurities and become a stand-up child with a principle and a relationship with God, someone that I can stand at this podium and be greatly proud of. So I come here tonight, and I'm going to tell you about how my life, and because we come here sometimes, and it's okay, you know, if we come and we talk about shooting heroin and smoking crack and shooting meth and smoking meth and drinking to excess, and we can talk about robbing banks, and we can talk about, you know, the stick-ups we did, and I robbed this one, and everybody claps and applauds, and they laugh. But when addicts come to the podium, and they start talking about the God of their understanding, and how powerful Narcotics Anonymous is, and how powerful Narcotics Anonymous is, and how powerful Narcotics Anonymous is, that we have a tendency to want to judge them and say they're bragging about how good their life is. But why can we talk about the good, bad, but we can't talk about the good? I came to talk about the good tonight. I came to talk about the good in my life. How God has taken me from a place of despair. How He's put me in a spot where my life is worth living. Where I get up every day and I'm happy that I'm alive. And I look at life like it's just another opportunity for me to just live and live. Into that spirit through sponsorship. And this baby comes home and we do what we gotta do and we do all the treatments and she's a beautiful young girl. And in the process of coming home, my wife gets diagnosed with cancer. And I'm not gonna tell you, my wife's been diagnosed with cancer 7 times. Since I've been clean, 7 times she's had cancer, and 7 times she has beat cancer. So when I come here and I talk about how good God is in my life, I'm not even here to tell you that you need to get a God. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to tell you that I found a relationship with God through sponsorship in the 12 steps, and my life has never been as good as it is now. My life is better today after using for 20 years and being clean for 20 years than it was before I ever used. Because in Who's an Addict, it says some of us believe that we suffered with this disease long before we ever used. So I suffered with this spiritual dilemma. And I want to read something else in our literature. It's in the introduction. And it talks about spiritual matters. The beginning of the book is not Who's an Addict, contrary to popular belief. It says, based on our experience, we believe that every addict, including the potential addict, suffers from an incurable disease of body, mind, and spirit. We were in the grip of a hopeless dilemma, the solution of which is spiritual in nature. Therefore, this book will deal with spiritual matters. And what that means for me is that I have to deal with my spirit. It's my spirit that suffers from time to time. And the flesh, which is my skin and my body, suffers the consequences of me not addressing the spiritual aspect of my disease. And when my spirit is not addressed, the flesh suffers. And when my flesh suffers, the people around me suffer because I still think it's all about me and I neglect my responsibilities and it causes pain to the people who are in my life based on me not being willing to deal with the spiritual aspect of the disease, which is my raging self-obsession. So I'm here and I suffer. Listen, I'm not even going to say that because I don't believe that anymore. I don't believe I'm suffering with the disease of addiction. I believe I'm living with the disease of addiction. I believe that every day that I wake up and I have the obsession has been removed, that my life is something to be proud of. I have victories, daily victories in my life based on making the right decisions. I'm not the one that's going to come here and tell you all these horrible things that I do, and I rob from my job, and I steal time, and I steal things from my job, and I misappropriate money. I'm not going to come here and tell you that because that's not how I'm living my life just for today. Just for today, I'm living my life based in a relationship with God, which means that everything that I do, I put God in it first. I don't make decisions without a prayer. I pray before every decision that I make. Because the reality of it is that together, right? Together, the theme, together, together, together. What happens is we get together with each other in here, but in here we have a hard time dealing with spiritual matters because we're in different spiritual avenues and on different spiritual levels. So I had to find a relationship through the sixth, through the second step, the third step, the sixth step, the seventh step, the 11th step. To find this God that was inside me. He was not outside. He wasn't in some building with a cross on it, or some building with a saw on it, or some building with something else on it. I didn't have to dress a certain way or talk a certain way. I didn't have to go out seeking him. He was inside. He was living in there. He was inside, and he was just stirring around inside me. And every so often, this like feeling of good and goodness would come out of me, and I would, it would be so foreign to me that I would just push back and I would say, second step, and it works now. Why? Because it's easier to fall back on the familiar ways of our addiction than it is to live by this new principled way of life. The problem with most of us, and I'll talk about me, the problem with me is I don't want to press through because I suffer with instant gratification. I want to feel better right now. I don't want to do the right thing every day for a year and then get results. I want to think about doing the right thing tomorrow. And then not do the right thing tomorrow. Six Steps talks about why I ask for something before we're ready for it. And I come into Narcotics Anonymous and I suffer with this disease that wants me, right, that wants me to get instant gratification. It wants to use this podium and my ability to articulate words to get me to think that I'm someplace that I'm not. Because the reality is just because I can share at a convention and get oohs and ahs, and people can say, I listened to your tape when I had 30 days clean and you changed my life, and then I think that I'm doing the right thing. In the meantime, back at the ranch, my wife and daughters aren't speaking to me because I wasn't doing the right thing at home, but I was at that convention sharing my behind off, making people ooh and ah, and everybody in the room thought I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And my wife is saying, how come you didn't go grocery shopping before you left, and I don't understand why you want to hang out with those people. I don't know if you understand what I'm talking about. You know, you get here and your family loves everybody that's in the fellowship and everybody's great and go to those meetings, and then all of a sudden, why are you going to so many meetings? Why are you hanging out with those people? Oh, that's your family now. You don't want to talk to me. You don't want to be bothered with me. Because what happens is we forget that recovery starts at home. Once you get clean and you get some recovery in your life, you gotta learn how how to take this thing home and learn how to be a good husband and a good wife and a good father and a good mother and a good son and a good daughter and a good friend and a good partner and all the things that we desire to be, we have to take the show on the road. So my wife gets diagnosed with cancer, and we battle it. She's had several times she's had cancer, and then in 99 my daughter is born, my youngest child, Haley Amanda, is born June 9th, 1999. July 3rd, we bring her to the hospital with 105 fever. 2 hours after we're in the hospital, her fever's 107. By midnight, her fever's 110. They have tubes in every orifice of her body. You can't even hold her. She's so hot that when you hold her, her body temperature takes over your body temperature. And they come in the room and they tell us that we need to talk to whoever it is that we believe can give her last rites, whether it's our pastor, our chaplain, or if we don't have somebody, they can get somebody from the hospital. And they tell us that she's never going home. So they tell me that here's my second child. The first child's better, and here's my second child, and they tell me that she can't come home with me, that we're going to have to take her and bury her in the next couple days because she's not going to live. And I look at the doctor and I tell the doctor that he needs to just do his job and mind his own business. Just do your job. You didn't create her, you can't take her. And he gets all upset with me and he leaves the room and he calls my wife out and he says, "Can I speak to you?" My wife goes outside and he says, "You need to talk to your husband." And my wife says, "You need to leave my husband alone. It's a good idea if you don't come in the room when my husband's here from now on." And on June 9th of this year, that little girl turned 13 years old. She had an incurable blood virus. That was the diagnosis. Today, she has nothing. There's no blood virus. There's no virus in her body. Nothing. She's healed. Completely healed. She has no illnesses. She has no ill effects. She's an absolutely breathtaking, gorgeous young lady. Gorgeous. She's not pretty. She's not attractive. She's breathtakingly gorgeous. Obviously, she gets that from her mom. The poor oldest child looks like her dad. Everybody's got a cross to bear. In the meantime, my wife is diagnosed with cervical cancer. I'm just going to do the last 4 years, and then I'm going to get out of your way, and we're going to listen to the other speaker. 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, my wife was diagnosed with colon cancer. And they give us three options. They say we can do surgery, we can do treatment, or we can do nothing and see what happens. So we go home, my wife and I, and we pray. My wife asked me to help her make the decision, and I refused. I don't have cancer. I can't make the decision. She decides she's going to have the surgery and let them take 2 foot of her colon out. And she goes in, and they take 2 foot of her colon out. And they check all of her lymph nodes and everything else inside of her body. And she has no cancer. And that was March 17th of 2008. And she's cancer-free since March 17th, 2008. And in the process of this, I'm not using. I'm calling my sponsor. I'm writing on step work. I'm sponsoring men. I still have a home group. I'm still attending meetings, 2 to 3 to 5 meetings a week based on what my children's schedule is and whether or not my wife and I have plans to go out to dinner and do the things that we like to do because I've learned how to live this life outside of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't just come to meetings every day. I don't hide in the fellowship. I'm available. I'm visible. I let people see me. I make myself available when people look for help. I seek help in Narcotics Anonymous. I do the things I have to do. I come to conventions when I'm invited and it's not too much on my family. It's not a financial strain. It's not an emotional strain. I'll come and I'll share my experience, strength, and hope. If I had my way, I'd be at convention every single weekend, hanging out, fellowshipping, just doing what I have to do, just feeling better about myself. But the reality of it is that recovery tells me that I have to be at home. I have to be able to sit across the table from my wife when she's going through a struggle and be able to listen to her Like I listen to the men I sponsor when they call me with a struggle, and I have no problem being on the phone with them over they broke their toenail and they stubbed their toenail and they got 12 years clean and they want to go out and shoot dope because they stubbed their toenail. In the meantime, my wife has this big blowout with her boss and she may lose her job and it's going to affect my family, but I don't really have 5 minutes to give her because, you know, ESPN is on and I'm trying to watch SportsCenter, and you know that SportsCenter that shows the same thing 17 times a day, I might miss one of the 17 times, and how dare she want to speak to me when SportsCenter comes on, because it's still always about me feeling better about myself at the expense of others. I don't know if you understand what I'm talking about. I don't know if you really get what I'm like. Listen, it's still because when I come here, right? When I come here, when I'm done, when I say I'm thank you for allowing me to share, people are gonna clap. When the meeting is over and people see me in the hallway, they're gonna give me a heart-to-heart hug. I learned that this weekend. I learned about heart-to-heart hugs. And I'm gonna get a heart-to-heart hug, and people are gonna say things to me like, thank you for sharing, and you really helped me to get in touch with this, and I'm gonna do better in that area. But when I go home tomorrow, and I walk through my front door, my wife is not gonna say, thank you for sharing. You're such a great guy. I love you so much. I miss you. And my wife, listen, I've been texting back and forth with my wife all weekend, how much I miss her and how much I love her. And sometimes I feel like I wish I shouldn't have came. I should have just stayed home and hung out with my wife. And I'm gonna tell you why, because a month ago, she went for a mammogram. About 7 weeks ago, she went for a mammogram. And they did this mammogram and they sent us a letter, and the letter said that they see spots on the mammogram. And we needed to come back, I say we because I do everything with my wife. We had to go back for them to do another mammogram. They wanted to do 5 more views, they wanted to do an MRI, they wanted to do a CAT scan, they wanted to do everything they could do because they wanted to make sure, because of our past history, that if it was a lump, that it was just a cyst and it wasn't cancerous. So we go back and they do like 5 more views and they do all of these special tests, and we go and we see the breast surgeon and we set up for biopsies and we get all of this stuff done, and in the process, we're going to this hospital, this special hospital, it's a special breast surgeon hospital, and we're going to go to this hospital in New Jersey, and in the process of this, I start doing the things I was taught to do, and I send out a mass text to all of my friends who I believe are prayer warriors in Narcotics Anonymous, and I tell them that my wife, right, she's been diagnosed with spots on her left breast, and that right now my family is in trouble, and that we're behind the eight ball, but I believe in the power and the healing grace of God of my understanding, and I believe that through corporate prayer for healing, that she will be healed. And I ask every one of those people, like 75 people that are on this particular text messaging thing that I have, I ask them to pray. And on a daily basis, I receive 25 to 30 texts from these people saying, we got you. We prayed for healing. Your wife is going to be all right. Jimmy, keep pressing on. Keep pressing on. Keep pressing on. Jimmy, we love you. Jimmy, we love you. Some of these people, my wife is not in recovery. Some of these people actually called my house and got on the phone with my wife and encouraged my wife to keep pressing on and to keep doing what she needs to do. Told her how much they loved her and that they were in her corner, and if she needed to come cry on their shoulder, that she could go and leave my house and go with them and sit with them and hold their hand and pray with them and cry with them, because the power of Narcotics Anonymous goes way beyond what we do in these meetings. It is so powerful what happens here. And then we go, and this hospital sends us a letter, and it says we want to do a 3D view of her left breast. And I'm not trying to be graphic, it's just my story. And we go, and I go with her, and we do this 3D view of her left breast on a Wednesday, and on Saturday we get a letter from this hospital, and it's addressed to my wife, and my wife is with my youngest daughter at dance school, and I call her, I'm like, there's something here from St. Barnabas, and she said, what is it? I go, I don't know. She goes, you didn't open it? I said, I'm not Lori. She said, open it, open it. And I opened it. And the letter said, we can find no abnormalities in your scan. So you know, because we're human and we suffer with doubt, we're not positive. So we make an appointment with the breast surgeon, and we go to the breast surgeon, and the breast surgeon says, they're gone. And I sit with the breast surgeon. We sit with the breast surgeon, and the breast surgeon, my wife wants evidence now. She's like, well, what happened? Do you think they were smears? And the woman says, we took 14 views and an MRI, and they were on every single one of them. Not every test could have a smear on it. You had lumps, and they're gone. And I looked at the doctor, and she said to me, do you have any questions? I said, no, I just have a statement. And she said, and what's that? I said, I know that you're in the medical field and you have to deal in practicality, but I live in a spiritual realm, and I believe that God healed my wife of those lumps in her left breast. Because I'm going to share some things. I'm going to share that I believe that God has to test us to see where we are, whether or not He can give us the next assignment He has for us. God has an assignment for everybody in this room. Every single individual in this room has a divine assignment from the God of their understanding. Even if you don't believe in God, you have an assignment. At some point through the 12 steps, you're going to develop a relationship that's going to start out as a power greater than yourself, and then it's going to become a higher power, and then it's going to become God, and then there's a possibility down the line it may become a specific God. It doesn't have to become, but it can become a specific God, and you can learn how to pray in a specific way and live a specific life free from active addiction. I'm not talking about drug addiction, I'm talking about active addiction, because in the first step, and it works out why, it says that drugs are just the most obvious symptom of the disease of addiction. Why, at 20 plus years clean, do I still suffer with self-centeredness and self-righteousness and indignance, and why do I still suffer with insecurities? You know, you come to the podium and you have the ability to articulate words, and you can say things, and you can dazzle people, and they laugh, and they cry, and they feel good, and they feel bad, and they're standing, and they're looking from the audience, and they're going, this guy is awesome! Oh my God! She was like, last night I'm listening to the headphones, and Joanna is sharing, and I'm sitting in the row, in like the third row, and Joanna is sharing, and I have the headphones in, and I'm crying. Because I'm realizing that she's speaking in a language that I don't understand, and that you guys cared enough to hire somebody for me to have a set of headphones so that I could have a relationship with Joanna. And we had coffee together last night. My sponsee did Zumba with her today in the class. I don't know if you know how powerful that is. Do you realize that the disease doesn't know language? The disease doesn't know color, and neither should recovery. We should be able to come here free of judgment. I came to Canada this weekend not to carry the message, but to get the message carried to me. It was carried. The message was carried to me this weekend. And I will go home, and everybody in my area that's affiliated with me will hug heart to heart. They're going to hug heart to heart. Because people took time out of their life last night when I got here, yesterday afternoon when I got here, to tell me, nah. Stop hugging me on the left, hug me on the right. Or stop hugging me on the right, hug me on the left. I want to feel your heartbeat. Do you know how important that is to somebody that comes in here and doesn't feel loved? Do you know how powerful you guys are this weekend? I'm sitting at a table with four people from Montreal. They're speaking French. They could have been talking about me. I have no idea. But there's one girl there, we were joking with her, and I was telling her girlfriend, friends and the other guy at the table that she's a little crazy, right? And they were like, crazy. I'm like, yeah, a little bit crazy. And then she did something else. I said, well, maybe down here crazy. And then she did something else, and I said, maybe down here crazy. And then she did something else, and I went like this. And then we were talking, and I said, how long are you clean? And she said, 5 days. And I said to her, we're not here no more, we're not here no more, we're here now. Because she's here. And now our job is to love her until she can learn how to like herself. See, I don't believe in sponsoring women, I only sponsor men. I believe men should sponsor men, women should sponsor women. That's just my own personal belief system. I know the literature came out and they say that men can sponsor women. I don't know nothing about the menstrual cycle. I don't know about being pregnant. I don't know about that time of the month. The only thing I know about menopause is my wife makes my bed at about 140 degrees, and then she has the covers off of us, and then the covers are on us, and then the covers are off us, and then the covers are on us. And she wants the fan on, she wants the fan off, so we put the fan on. Why is the fan on? I don't understand. You got it cold in here. Why is it so hot in here? That's what I know about menopause. I'm pretty sure I got a pretty good taste of it. I don't want to go through it. She can keep it. All you women can keep it. But I don't know anything about being a woman. But I'm going to tell you something. In the years that I've been blessed to be clean, God has done some things in my life. My home group is newcomers. And I don't know how much time I got. Somebody might have to give me the sign. Where you at, Herb? I'm good? All right. Don't tell you. Luigi, tell him not to tell me that. We'll be here till midnight. I had the same home group for 19 years. And it wasn't in the area that I lived. I didn't like the meetings when I got clean in the area where I lived. I grew up in the projects. I grew up around, I was the only white family. Everybody around me was black. And where I live, it's all white. And when I went to meetings, I couldn't identify, I didn't talk like them. You know, Nick was saying, he goes, I remember meeting you years ago, you had your hat cocked to the side, your shorts were all baggy. He goes, look at you, you're in a suit. I've matured. I've grown up. My hat's not cocked to the side anymore, I wear it straight in the front. My clothes fit. They're a little baggy, but they fit. They're way better than they were when I got here. But God kept telling me for 2 years that I needed to go back to the area that I live. That I needed to make meetings in the area where I live. And I kept saying, not now, God, later. Not now, God, later. Not now, God, later. I don't know. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go to those meetings. I don't like the meetings. I don't like the atmosphere. I don't like the structure. I don't like the way they do things. They do things that are not Narcotics Anonymous. I don't want to go there. I'm so used to having a certain way because the resistance to change is built into me. And this guy that I sponsored in the early 90s used, and he got jammed up, and he needed a sponsor, and he called me, and he said, I'm getting out of treatment. Now, he won't go to meetings where there's diversity. He only goes to meetings where it's predominantly, if not all white. That's who he is. So when he called me, I had no choice but to take him to those meetings. So for 90 days, with 19 years clean, I made a meeting every single day with him for 90 days. I took him to meetings, I picked him up, I brought him home. On his 93rd day, he decided to get high again. But what happened was because I had been taking him to meetings every day, I had developed relationships. I started sponsoring some guys down there. I got this meeting that I really liked. And it was an open speaker discussion meeting with a step meeting in the back. And he used, and I left my home group for 19 years, and I joined that group. And I'm going to tell you why I joined that group. Because there's kids in that group. Kids. 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, 23 years old. And when I see these kids come through the door, I see my daughter. I see my 19-year-old daughter when I see these young girls come through the door. And I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to share this, and you can never invite me back to Canada. Maybe you guys don't do it up here, but at home, I don't see the women flock to the new girls. I hear the new girls share their struggles, and I see the women with clean time go the other way. They don't flock to them. So I sit in my home group a lot of Monday nights, and I listen to these girls share struggles. After 5 weeks, they share every week about how great their life is. And then they come one Monday night, and their life is in turmoil, and they want to get high. And the meeting ends, and at home we close with the Serenity Prayer. And the meeting ends, and I watch all the women with time go to their little corners, and I watch these newcomer girls with a year clean and 6 months clean. I watch them just like stand there, like I just shared my heart out. I just cried for 10 minutes on the floor asking for help, and nobody's helping me. And because of the integrity that I've built inside of me, I approach these young girls, and I say to them, listen, I'm a married man, my kid's your age, I am not interested in you on any level, outside of the fact that can we talk for a minute? And I bring up to them things like, for 5 weeks you're on top of the world. Yeah, what happened is pretty bad, but if you don't use, you can get back where you were last week. And I was at my home group one Monday night, and I'm sitting on the side wall, and this girl gets up and she gets a 60-day key tag. And I was telling Mark and them before, and she spins around, and she's looking right at me. And they said, who are you and how's it work? And she says her name, and she says, at 30 days clean, I wanted to get high so bad one night. And I was in a meeting, and she's looking at me and speaking to me, but she's telling the group how she stayed clean. She said, and Jimmy T did the group anniversary and changed my life, and I don't ever want to use again. And I said to myself, for the first time in my whole entire life, I've become effective. I'm on this new thing. I'm on this effective thing. Is your life effective? Are you affecting people? Do you change? Are the people that you interact with on a daily basis, is their life better after they interacted with you? Has the 12 steps changed you spiritually to a point where you enhance the quality of other people's lives just by being in their presence? I challenge you to do that. I challenge you to leave this convention this weekend and start changing people's lives. Don't worry about what you're doing in NA and the 37 service commitments and how many people you sponsor, and I got 7 commitments and I'm involved with 46 groups. I'm at every speaker jam. But in the meantime, back at the ranch, your wife and kids aren't speaking to you. I listen to a lot of music, and I listen to a lot of Eminem. I'm a big hip-hop fan. The people in Texas call me Slim Shady. 20 years ago, I was Slim Shady. Now I'm Jimmy T. But he has a song. When he went away, for those who don't know, he went away to treatment. When he went away to treatment, he made this song, said, "When I'm Gone." And in this song it says, have you ever loved somebody? No, really loved somebody. Someone you would give an arm for. I have my daughter's portraits tattooed on my left arm. I gave my left arm for my daughters. And then the song goes on to say, but you find out that you're the source of their pain. Because you're still wrapped up in yourself. And when he made that song, and I listened to the words of that song, it changed my life. Because I took a look at my wife and my daughters, and they were proud of the fact that I was clean, and I was sponsoring guys, and you know, I wasn't getting high no more, my whole paycheck came home, and they were really happy with all of that stuff, but they really did not have a full-out blown relationship with their father and their husband. And I made a commitment that I was going to change that. See, because contrary to popular belief, in the first step, we become empowered. We want to say the first step, we're powerless. But it empowers us, because the first step says we admitted we were powerless. I've accepted the first step as true in my life, I am no longer powerless over the disease of addiction. I have a choice whether or not I want to live in it or I don't want to live in it. So when I go to meetings and I hear people say, I did such and such because I'm an addict, I go to them after the meeting and say, you did such and such because you wanted instant gratification and you want to blame the disease for the decisions that you're making on a daily basis. So that's what we like to do. And then usually when I do what I want to do to feel better, I feel so much shame and guilt on the other side that moment of feeling better is not even worth all of the suffering that I go through. Because I suffer. I can't speak for anybody else, but I suffer when I do the wrong thing. When I'm inappropriate with my wife, when I come out the side of my neck with my wife, when I'm not patient with my wife, I get in my bed at night, and when I hit my knees and I do my 10th step, and I go right back to the 6th step, and it says, were you so callous today that you could see the pain of your behaviors on someone else's face? I do a 10th step every night. I don't write it out. I do it every night and I take a conscious inventory of where I'm at. Did I do anything today purposely or not purposely to hurt anybody else? I don't come here and tell you that because I'm an addict, I'm apt to wander off course. That's an excuse. You are what you tell yourself you are. If you call yourself a chronic relapser, you're going to use again. If you call yourself a recovering addict, you start to believe it. If you claim victory over the disease of addiction, it comes true. If you come in here and speak words of positive affirmation about yourself and the people around you, you start to become positive. And the people around you start to become positive. Because what we have, the disease of addiction is not contagious, but the spirit of recovery is contagious. And when you get it, your job is to share it. Your job is to spread it. Your job is to go around and let people know that this is possible. I come to Canada not because I want accolades and applause and I want to see Luigi. Yeah, I want to see Luigi. I haven't seen him in probably 15 years. But I come here because I want that girl with 5 days clean to know that she never, ever, 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 ever has to use again. Use again. I don't care if your mom dies, you don't have to use. If your wife dies, you don't have to use. No matter what happens to you, you never have to use again. Freedom is on your hands. Just do what you gotta do. Work the steps, get a sponsor, come to meetings, help other people, carry this message. Better than that, live the message. Be a vision of what this thing can do for you. And do you know what diamonds are made out of? Diamonds are made out of black coal. You know, black, dirty, disgusting coal. You know, you get it in your stocking for Christmas when you're bad. That's what diamonds start as. But the more pressure the coal is put under, the more pressure that the coal gets put under, the more pure the diamond becomes. That's why I buried 2 sisters since I've been clean. That's why I held my mother-in-law in my arms when she took her last breath. That's why my wife was diagnosed with cancer 7 times. That's why my oldest child was put in a bubble never to come out. That's why my youngest child was given last rites at 3 weeks old. Because God knew that I had met the condition to deal with the pressure that He was going to allow to be in my life so that when I came out on the other side, I would be a diamond shining so brightly that no matter how much people despise me or or didn't like me because I was what they wanted to be and weren't willing to do the work, that diamond would be so brightly shining that I would be the beacon that our 12 step talks about, because that's why we're here. We're here to be a beacon of light for the addict, for the young lady sitting next to me with 5 days clean. I don't know if you know how important that was to me tonight. It changed my whole entire approach when she sat there and befriended me. She doesn't speak English, broken English, but she sat and befriended me. She had no idea I was speaking tonight. Had she known, she probably would have stayed away from me. But that's how God set it up. He put her next to me, not because I was special, but because she was special, and I needed to come to the podium and tell you that you're special, and we love you, and we need you. This ain't about me. This ain't about me. This ain't about you. It's about being there for the addict that comes in and wants to be loved. If nobody told you they love you today, you're hanging out with the wrong people. I'm just going to say it. Hanging out with the wrong people. I was told I was loved by people today. I met them yesterday. And they were like, we love you. I was like, okay, love you too. That's usually my first thing, love you, because that's my spirit. If nobody told you they love you today, you'll be told now, I love you guys. Canada, if anything, Quebec, Montreal, Canada, wherever you're from, if anything I said touched your spirit, we open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. If you make a decision to clap, you're clapping for the God of your understanding, because had I not shown up, the message would have been carried. Don't get it twisted. I'm nobody special. I'm not a spiritual giant. I just got a giant spirit. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you for having me share.